Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcome you to this July 12th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the with the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. That's right, the York College radio community is plugged in to our broadcast. Well, today our topic will be one of interest that we're picking up on this topic, Ashley, and that is gentrification, a state of emergency in Black America. We're going to look at the case of the Crenshaw Subway Coalition. Crenshaw, for many of you who travel west to the lovely city of Los Angeles, is a storied Black community within Los Angeles. And so we're going to be joined by Damon Goodman, Executive Director of the Crenshaw Subway Coalition, momentarily to talk about all things gentrification. And you'll have an opportunity to comment as well. We also just want to continue to ask people to be disciplined. That Delta variant is raging. Not so much and not so bad in New York, but it is raging elsewhere. Get on the phone, tell your family, friends, in other places. Hey, you know, get that vaccination. I was in a place the other day and checking on something and someone I had known for years, and, you know, they want to give a fist bump and this, that, and the other. And I said, they ain't vaccinated. They ain't vaccinated. The people are trying to tell them, get vaccinated. Because, you know, you can spread it to others and you might get it. And even though, this Delta one is bad. So you don't want to, I mean, almost everybody who's getting it these days and who's being hospitalized and the death rate is from the unvaccinated. So anyway, a lot of tension in the air these days. So we also want to just continue to tell people that you can call the Community Cares Listening Line. The Community Cares Listening Line, which is sponsored by the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, particularly to just have a sympathetic, empathetic, culturally appropriate listener. Listen with all of the violence and all of the stuff that's taking place now. We need culturally appropriate listeners, and you can do that by calling, and it's confidential and anonymous, 877-827-6677, 877-827-6677. That's the IBW Black Family Summit, Black Family Summit Community Listeners Line. Again, 877-827-6677. And again, we're delighted that WBAI is partnering with us on this vital service. And I continue to get very positive feedback in terms of, in fact, this is the, even though we, you know, do other means of communicating, this is the one that really, really has been producing, again, demonstrating the value of WBAI. Well, once we complete our conversation, we get up on the soapbox, we're going to be talking about the crisis of MAGA, that is Make America Great Again, madness. Madness. The craziness that is going on. The big lie. The quest for white minority rule by way of voter suppression. The no mass madness that's taking place. And the anti-vaxxers who are out here wreaking havoc on American society. Just how dangerous is it? We want to ask you to call in and let us know and give your opinion on that, as well as our conversation about gentrification. Well, delighted to have join us now, Damon Goodman, who is the executive director of the Crenshaw Subway Coalition. We already indicated that those of you who have traveled to L.A. or if you ever go to L.A., the Crenshaw community is a storied community. It is a place of great pride in Los Angeles, and Damon Goodman joins us from LA to talk about the issue of gentrification, a state of emergency in Black America, the case of the Crenshaw Coalition. Damon Goodman, welcome to Vantage Point.
It is so good to be with you, Dr. Daniels.
All right. Well, let's first of all, when I was just checking out to, you know, get some nice images to put on our little promo and so forth, I see these images of this guy who's shooting basketballs, and I may have even seen a football image. I said, well, this brother has another life out here, or had another life in terms of some kind of athletic prowess or whatever. So I said, let me just ask this brother about his background. So I just want to start there, really, as I always do, in terms of a little bit about your background. Are you originally from Los Angeles? Did you migrate there? A little bit about, and what brings you to this proposition of social justice activism? And by the way, anything you want to say about your athletic prowess is fair game. Go right ahead.
Well, there's a couple brothers who go by Damian Goodman, who I think one of them was a pretty good basketball player, and I think, I don't know if he was drafted, another one that played real football. And a lot of people, they Google Goodman, and they say, well, this is basketball. You know, I break the stereotype. Basketball is my one sport that I'm probably not so great at. This an urban sport. I was a football player, University of Washington, go Huskies. And, you know, I like to joke that I hung up my football cleats to get into a more contact sport that is politics.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. That makes good sense. And at the University of Washington, were you associated with the Black Student Union or various coalitions and so forth that sort of inspired you to get into this contact sport?
Not at all. I was on the football team. When you're on the football team, there's two things to do. You go to school and you play football.
Right.
Especially we were the top Pac, now Pac-12, we were the top Pac-10 team. That time we had just come off the Rose Bowl. Rick Neuheiser, there was not much else to do. My orientation, I think, there were two formative things that happened in my early life. One was I went to a very privileged white school as a high school. My mother, Catholic, all boys, Loyola High School. And it really opened my eyes to just not just microaggressions, but just how other people were living relative to how I was growing up in Leimert Park, Crenshaw in the 1990s. You know, now it's gentrification hotspot, but the place I grew up next to, I remember like it was yesterday, the day the crack house I lived next to was raided, right? And so it introduced me to certain things and the way and seeing how people moved. I'd always had a political bug within me. But then I graduated and I played an all-star game the day I graduated. I hurt my back, not severely, but it required a little bit of physical therapy. And so I'd made a decision that instead of going to college in the summer of 2000, I would stay that term and basically try and get in the spring term and play spring ball. And that was the election of 2000, right? I was glued to my TV. I think it was the first time CNN had a ticker at the bottom. And I just could not get over this concept. Everybody was talking about George Bush's rights and George Bush's rights and Al Gore's rights. I'm thinking, you had all these black people who voted, whose votes are not counted. And so this little seed that was within me, that just, it was watered, it sprouted. After I came back from Washington, I just started being involved in politics on a major end, doing things such as, I think I was the youngest staffer for Wesley Clark's presidential campaign in 2004, done everything from the presidential down to school board in every role from, you can imagine, including campaign management. And so my orientation initially within activism and politics and power dynamics came from a political lens, right? Seeing that there were things that could happen that could affect society as a whole and that good people need to be in there. And then I came down to around 2006, actually, to be specific. We had this transit project that was being built in Leimert Park to the east-west. Crenshaw line is north-south, Expo line is east-west. And it was just a clear-cut case of environmental racism where the project was not being built at the same standard as it was in the directly adjacent white communities. And you could see all, again, the microaggressions and the government agents and executives who just did not have value for the community. That turned into, as after we fought successfully in getting some things there, into a full-throated effort on the Crenshaw Subway Coalition. And when we established it, and these were the 3 points that I always remind folks of, we had three objectives when we started the Crenshaw Subway Coalition about 2009, 2010, formally incorporated in 2011. One, we wanted to see the line built underground on Crenshaw Boulevard. This is our Lenox Avenue. This is our 125th. This is the heart of black Los Angeles in a city with dwindling black population. And we knew what construction just by itself could do to it. And it ended up being, because of the way they constructed, very detrimental. Hundreds of black businesses went under. So we wanted to see it built underground in a bore tunnel. We wanted to see that there be a station at Monroe Park, the cultural center, enclave, center of consciousness, community, and culture for black Los Angeles, because there wasn't one. They were trying to shortchange us. Two, we wanted to see black people working on the project. We didn't say local hire, we said black hire, because the two hardest places to find a black man in the city of Los Angeles, Dr. Daniels, is on a construction site and a hockey game. And then three, and this is where it gets to where we are now, what we call phase three. We wanted to see the economic development that was a product of the infrastructure addition, the rail line, be based on principles of local economic empowerment. So we said local economic empowerment then because, you know, socialism wasn't a good word. But we have been about seeing these cooperative development, shared community ownership strategies as a means for community uplift and as a response and a critique in some respects. The black capitalism that just thinks you just put a bunch of high black faces in high places, have folk that are making a bunch of money, but still the conditions of the people don't change. So we were talking about this when we initially founded, and it just so happens that between 2011 and 2021, the Crenshaw community has unfortunately become the hottest real estate market in the most unaffordable city in America. And this right. connects the black folk.
Right. Well, that kind of you anticipated some of my questions, because number one, as you well know, you came in 2019 to a major conference that we held in Newark, New Jersey, hosted by the Honorable Roz J. Baraka, as we pulled people from all across the country around this question of gentrification. We call it the Negro Removal Program of the 21st century, and dealing with the question of displacement of black people and black culture, which you have both sort of touched on. And so we're now saying with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century that gentrification is a state of emergency in black America. And so I guess the question that you're sort of already dealing with is, I was going to ask you the question, is the Crenshaw community an example of this phenomenon?
Undoubtedly. And I think most black communities in especially coastal urban cities, but I would even argue you're even seeing gentrification take place in some black communities in Detroit. I mean, it's insane. And it's understandable. We have a whole program where we talk about and get people understanding. This is just the latest form of manifestation of globalized capitalism. It seeks to undercut and continue the exploitation of working class people, many of whom are black, and to enrich an increasingly more powerful global elite. It's been going on for a while, but the first indications, I think, many people who are not paying attention to the decisions of trillion-dollar asset management companies like BlackRock, the first indication of them is when they see a white couple walking their dog or pushing a stroller down their street or affordable restaurant. No, this is that. By that time, you know, we have a saying, by the time that happens, sometimes it's too late.
Too late.
Because decisions have already been made, right? And when we talk about Crenshaw, and you're seeing this happen, right, there has been a systemic, and this is urban communities throughout America, right? And you talk about this, Dr. Daniels, IBW21 lifts this up. There was a systemic process of removing those jobs and those opportunities from urban communities during the increased globalization, the NAFTA world that we came into well before NAFTA, but that was, I think, it was a flashpoint within it. And then the insertion of a reduction, of crack cocaine, a reduction in community services that came simultaneous to those things. So an intentional devaluing of real estate, removal of opportunity, so that now you can buy those brownstone walk-ups, or you could buy those brownstone walk-ups 10 years or 20 years from now at rock bottom and now make them multi-million dollar opportunity. So you've got to pull money out you've got to deprive a community of opportunity for decades, and that's intentional, that's systemic, to be able to make money cashing in when you finally determine that we're going to put the infrastructure in, we're going to add the amenities, we're going to move this citywide or global-wide effort to reimagine cities. So we're experiencing that in Crenshaw, but it's happening throughout many other urban areas across America, across the world. This is not something that is episodic. This is not something that is going to go away, absent people being vigilant and being and having the type of convenings that we had in that emergency summit in 2019. It's going to take a real effort, a lot of resources, political, social, and financial, to be able to really combat this trend.
Right. And you talked earlier, and I don't want to tease this out a little bit because, you know, the assumption that because you're Black that you may be in opposition and so forth. One of the things that you've laid out in your analysis, and this was my question, is what roles are various sectors, even in the Black community, playing in addressing and combating the crisis? But also the other side of the question is, you know, who are the culprits? You know, who are the people who are engaged in advancing this agenda? And you've already talked about the massive disinvestment that took place, massive disinvestment in our communities across the country. But I wish you already sort of teased that out a little bit, because I often ask you, well, what about elected officials? What about community-based leaders? And it seems like, you know, some of them are complicit and others, of course, are organizing vigorously to try to make change, but it's not as if everybody in the Black community is on the right side on this question.
Well, I mean, that ends up being the key point. We'll talk about, I'm sure, our efforts to come out to New York, but there are not enough Charles Barons and Ross Barakas and Antar Lumumbas in elected office. They are the exception, not the rule. And until they become the rule, communities like Crenshaw, Black communities like throughout America, are going to constantly be at risk. And we're not going to have an approach. You know, Charles has a real simple position. If my people can't afford it, you're not building it. Charles tells you what the incomes are going to be for the housing that's affordable. He's out there in the street fighting folk. And we don't see that. We've been told that Black faces in high places suddenly equates to some improved conditions. Improved conditions maybe for those that are, you know, and I'm not saying as a slight, especially not on a doctor's program, those that are college educated and already had the access. Maybe you're taking someone from middle management and making them an executive. But we're talking about a Crenshaw community whose demographics are like many communities in America. Now, we've got two extremes. Crenshaw's got View Park, Baldwin Hills, and Ladera Heights. Those are the richest Black communities in America, 1, 2, and 3. But it's also got abject poverty, people who have to rely on Section 8 and government programs, who have been denied work opportunities, and have just dealt with having to be Black people living in a racist America, right? Where the median household income for a family of four across the entirety of the Crenshaw community, because it's got the hills, it's also got the jungle, it's also got Jefferson Park and Hyde Park. The entirety of the community is about $45,000. Is the median household income for a family of four is about $45,000 a year. That's for a family of four. So how do you pay $2,000 a month in rent? How do you pay $1,500 a month? How do you pay $1,000 a month in rent without having your quality of life harmed, right? And so what we're seeing, you know, I used to say that we had a lot of Black politicians that were still in a 1999 mentality, right? That period of divestment where you had to beg industry and corporations to come in. And those corporations, typically, when they would come in, they would bring jobs. You might not have liked the Home Depot, and you sure as heck didn't like the Walmart, but at the very least, they hired your local folk. They're still thinking, or some of them are still thinking like that. They're not seeing that we have a complete cultural remake that is taking place or is being sought of urban Black communities, complete, total wipeout of Black folk, because the companies that come in, we've got a sweet green headquarters with 300 people coming in. They're not coming to hire people with records. They're not coming to put people who have made the Crenshaw community and held it down during those difficult times. They're coming because the land is cheap. They're coming because the police have done their gang injunctions and put everybody in jail and made people afraid of being around. They're coming because the conditions that that have made it acceptable for a reentry. I don't know any other way of saying that. And
right,
so that's
right.
Very different. That's
right.
Very different. When you come in with an industry where you know that 95% of the workers are going to be not black in a black community, when you come in with a project where 90% or even 80% of the housing is three times above what the people in the community can afford, that is not bringing economic investment to the community. That
right.
is leading to an economic or a cultural erasure of a community.
Right. Well, let me just ask you this, because your coalition made a very bold, audacious decision, and that was you decided to go and actually purchase the Crenshaw Mall. So what was behind that decision, and what is going to be required to achieve that, to make that successful, to achieve that objective?
So one of the things, and it is audacious, it's been called the biggest win in community development in America. It's gotten, I am happy to be on Vantage Point talking about it. It's an evolution. So one of the things that was taking place when we went to Newark on King's Day of Sacrifice in 2019, we had many of the leaders of the Crenshaw community beginning this conversation saying, we didn't just need small solutions. We did not just need to look at what we thought we could achieve. We needed to identify what we needed, to keep a black hold on this community and in black Los Angeles. In Los Angeles County, a county of about 10, 11 million people, black people are the only race that are anticipated to see a numerical decline every decade into the foreseeable future. So we said we need to have an intentionally black effort. So we started thinking about, well, then we've got to get these structures up. What's working? We began evaluating what was working both locally and throughout the country. We're bringing on many of these different ideas. And we said, okay, so we've got to get another community development corporation up. We've got to get a community land trust up. We've got to get an impact fund up so that we have a lot of money to take land off the speculative real estate market and we can provide loan opportunities. And we've got to do it in a manner where we're trying to build a solidarity economy. Again, people understand, yes, we want to support black entrepreneurs, but it's not just about making sure we have star chefs while the people who are waiting at tables and making poverty wages. We got to bring everybody up. And so as a component of that, we had assembled this amazing a group of people who were community development practitioners who have been doing radical economic work. Amazing folk just who had begun talking, and we announced at the end of 2019 the land trust. We quietly filed the paperwork for the Community Development Corporation. So we had done this work, and I want to say that was work that, again, lots of folks had been doing piecemeal, I will say, for a generation, going back to the 1992 Rodney King uprising. But we kind of said we need to be intentional here, much as IBW 21st Century is a major convener. We said we need to start convening people and having intentional conversations and focus. So fast forward about a year. In 2020, in June, we found that the Crenshaw Mall, this iconic cultural or commerce center, like the most significant center of commerce in black Los Angeles, was sought to be sold to CIM Group. Big Trump supporters, like and partners. I'm not just saying they gave money. No, business partners and development partners of Donald Trump, investment partners of Donald Trump. They were going to buy the mall. And they wanted to continue the process of cultural erasure, just wipe everything out on a 40-acre site in the middle of black Los Angeles. And we said, no, that's not happening. And then we said, you know, I was in the meeting. I'll never forget. I said, you know, $100 million. Because we've been trying to negotiate a community benefits agreement and see certain things to mitigate the harm done. And I said, you know, instead of for the last 6 months on the Crenshaw Mall redevelopment, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. The mall, nobody's buying a mall. Everybody's buying a redevelopment project. They want to see some retail within it, but they don't. They see the 40 acres at a transit stop in a rapidly gentrifying community as an amazing opportunity for them to redevelop it and bring in the high-end housing and the office space, not for us. So we were trying to see that the plan approved had appropriate mitigations for the community. And I said in one of the meetings, as soon as that was announced, you know, instead of having to negotiate a community benefits agreement, we should have just been going out there trying to raise $100 million to buy them all ourselves.
Right.
We should. And everybody, and to my surprise, people said, yeah, we should. And so we launched what is Downtown Crenshaw online at downtowncrenshaw.com, DT Crenshaw on Twitter, Downtown Crenshaw on Facebook and Instagram. And it has been a historic coming together. People who are on different sides of the issues, labor and business, nonprofit and for-profit, everybody saying, you know what, that's right. We should not allow outside parasitic, harmful forces to be in control of the economic future of Crenshaw. Black folk need to come together and buy our assets and reimagine it how we want to see it and be, have it be a project that is for us, not to displace us, but is for us. And it's been an amazing ride since we announced that May 9th of 2020, a day that we'll never forget. We kept promoting it. We said, you ain't going to believe this. But it's the move that everybody needs to make, Dr. Daniels. We can't be in a position of constantly seeing this would be the biggest development project in the city of Los Angeles that, if done inappropriately or by the wrong, will put a gentrification bomb throughout the community. Mm. Every single one of these spaces needs to be in control of Black community. I'm not talking about Black individuals. I'm talking about Black community as a collective. That's something
Black community collectively, yes.
Collective. And that's the power. And that's, I'll frankly say, you talked about some of the challenges we've had. Yeah, we've had some people in the community that actually have issues with that because they do see them as being the beneficiaries financially of gentrification. They would like to be investors in projects that displace their neighbors. It's a sad reality. They got all kinds of ways of talking around it, but it's a sad reality. And we're saying, no, hold on, brother. We're not talking about no 15% return for everybody. We're talking about a modest return. We're talking about a modest return. And because when you ask for that 15%, and this is the key point, Dr. Daniels, well, then what does the merchant have to pay in rent? And if the merchant's got to pay a high cost in rent, then they can't pay their workers. You know, and so getting people to think holistically as part of an ecosystem, as part of a community, I think is what has engendered so much support throughout the community and throughout the nation. And what we've done, and at this point, because there are a lot of great ideas, Dr. Daniels. We got a lot of great things. We got a lot of good white papers. We have a lot of good people meeting. What we've been able to do by having the structures in place, by putting together the technical experts, by it being led by people who have been in the street and have been showing and displaying they were for Black people for generations and decades and generations, we've been able to raise over $59 million towards the acquisition and identify community investment, social impact investment partners to back the purchase. So these are not the folks who are coming in who want to harm us. This is the good capital. This is philanthropy. Of that, over $34 million of it is philanthropy. We literally got $34 million in philanthropy raised in just a matter of months towards this endeavor. And what it tells you is that, one, it doesn't take a lot of money to completely change a project from being harmful to helpful to a community like Crenshaw. That's the first thing. The second is there are a lot of people, a lot of philanthropists, a lot of social impact investors out there who are looking for this model. They're not looking to make Jay-Z a little bit richer. No slight on Jay-Z. I know I'm talking to New York. But they're looking to see a Black community come together to collectively control its future, to be engaged in the process of self-determination.
Right, right. Now, you have run into some problems, however, and you had to come to New York because this obviously was seen as threatening, and all of a sudden, and you need to get additional capital. So I got a call from my dear beloved brother and IBW board member, Greg Achille, or Achille as he's just known, one of the baddest organizers, if not the baddest organizer on the planet, saying, Damian Goodman is coming to New York with a delegation and something about trying to embarrass a Russian oligarch and to rally the support of New Yorkers. So tell us why you had to come up here and try to deal with that issue. What was this all about?
Well, to be clear, I was just the chaperone. I was bringing the grandmamas of downtown Crenshaw. I was just making sure they didn't get arrested.
Okay, all right.
And so we have submitted now two times, but the second time was most egregious, offers to purchase the mall. They've not yet been successful in doing it against outside white gentrifiers who want to do harm to the community. And the current one is as bad an individual as you can imagine. He's a failed developer, once bankrupt. He's got a horrible sexual harassment case. He's got horrible statements that he said about black people. He is a cross between Donald Trump and Donald Sterling, that famous former Clipper owner who had to be chained up in the NBA. I mean, he's a bad cat. And we kept saying, who would finance this guy? And we couldn't, you know, he kept having difficulty. Despite the fact that we had money in the bank and we were ready to move, the people who were selling the mall wanted to stick with this racist, sexual assaulting, failed gentrifier, failed developer and gentrifier. And he found it in a guy by the name of Lynn Blavacnik. He's the owner of Warner Music Group, but he got his fortune, and he's the richest man in the UK, but he got his initial fortune by doing some pretty shady things back during the fall of the USSR. He's been put on Putin's list, called a crony of Vladimir Putin, and he has been cleaning up his image by giving lots of money to and philanthropically, including to the Carnegie Hall. I mean, he sits on the board of trustees at Carnegie Hall. How does a man who is on Putin's list and identified as doing the type of deals that he's done sitting on the board of Carnegie Hall? So we came to New York, or the grandmamas more specifically said, we got to go where this guy lives because he's in New York. Came to New York and saw all of his townhomes and apartments, which were all vacant. He's just hoarding these. People on the street said they thought that he was collecting them for Vladimir Putin. That hadn't been confirmed, but nonetheless. Came there, but also came there because here's an interesting part. This Crenshaw Mall is owned by a private equity fund that is capitalized. That is to say, all the money in it, with the exception of maybe 1 or 3%, is from public pensions.
Wow.
And so among the public pensions that own the Crenshaw Mall all the way in Los Angeles is the New York City Teachers System, TRS, and the New York City Employee Retirement System, and the New Jersey Investment System, and the healthcare system of New Jersey. So this is literally, and this is the point, and this is a major campaign, Dr. Daniels, because when we start talking about where are the resources that need to be reprogrammed so black communities can be uplifted and not uprooted, we are talking about trillions of public pension fund dollars. And probably a trillion, but we haven't added it all up, but definitely in the hundreds of billions of public pension fund dollars that go into real estate and give them decision-making power that harm black and brown communities, many of the same workers. Because we got local Los Angeles County Employee Retirement System, UC Board of California, they're in it too. So we've not been getting response from the broker, Deutsche Bank DWS. I mean, listen to what I'm saying, brother. We got a guy who's called the crony of Putin, and we got a bank that is the only bank that would lend to Donald Trump, determining the future of the most critical black commercial asset in Los Angeles.
Wow.
I mean, it's heavy. It's heavy. People tell me I need to get a flak jacket.
yeah, that's right.
But that's got to tell you, this is, so when we talk, and I like how we started this, when we talk about the international implications, when we talk about the scale and scope of the challenge, the communities like Crenshaw, communities undergoing gentrification, that's what we mean. This is one of the most powerful banks in the world, and this is the richest man in the UK, and we've had multiple different folks who are directly connected to the former president of the United States try and buy this asset. It sits in an opportunity zone that was signed by Donald Trump. That's how this happens. It's not just white folk coming in thinking that they can get low dollars and want to walk their kids around. It's much, much bigger than that.
Right, right. So now, so where does it stand now? How successful was your mission? I know that Charles Barron was helping in whatever way he could. I know there was some effort apparently to reach out to Scott Stringer. So tell us, what was the outcome of the mission, and to the degree that our listening audience here in New York wants to be helpful, what can we do? What can we do in New York? My listening audience, I'm sure, are glued to the radio listening to this account. What can we do to be supportive?
Well, the first thing is, especially if you are a New York City Employee Retirement System payee or a retiree, a member of NYSERS or a member of TRS, call down to the office right now, ask to speak to the executive directors, and tell them they need to sell them all to the people of Crenshaw, through downtown Crenshaw. It's really that simple. One phone call. Second, we were trying to meet with Scott Stringer because Scott Stringer, as the controller of the city of New York, is on both boards. He's on both the board for NYSERS and on the board of TRS, New York City, teachers. And so we have been having difficulty reaching some members who have real control over how this project goes, who this mall is awarded to. And I'm telling you, we've had none less than the NAACP, San Fernando Valley chapter, along with a host of civil rights leaders, say that this is textbook discrimination in contracting. Very similar to Byron Allen's lawsuit, right? There's an 1866 civil rights law, the Civil Rights Act that prohibits discrimination on the basis of race and other statuses in contracting. They're saying it's a textbook case. You got a whole bunch of attorneys looking at it. They're ready to throw their guns out, or they're ready to pull their legal guns out. And so we've got a lot of folk who are, you know, from what I can read, I'm not in New York. Scott Stringer's got a decent background from his work. I'm talking about his work. I'm not talking about the other things he's dealt with. And we had difficulty reaching him. Now, the grandmamas of downtown Crenshaw, this incredible collection of elders, women elders in our community who have really taken up the cause and said, we will go wherever we need to retire. We'll get on that plane. I think they had some success. We had some success coming out. One of the greatest things that we were able to do is while we were both identifying and going before the respective pension funds in Black Levick's office, we began focusing on, we also found time to go to East New York to see the actual projects Assemblymember now, soon to be councilmember or councilmember-elect Charles Barron and his beautiful wife, Inez, have been able to bring to fruition in East New York. And that was really, really powerful. And some people said, this is the best part of the whole trip. So just to recap, the biggest thing people can do is they can reach out to those folks who are on NYSERS and TRS. And they can also, I mean, we might be back. I don't know. They're trying to move fast and try and sell them all by the end of the month to these, you know, very scrupulous individuals with checkered histories and just not good past, the exact opposite type of people who should be in control of the Crenshaw Mall's future. But we might be back. And when we come back, I mean, it's interesting how they're all pretty much all in Midtown. So we got right. folk in Midtown who can give some addresses and start knocking on some doors. They didn't. Right. They refused to meet with us. They refused to meet with the delegation. But I don't think, I think because they knew that we had to be there a short period of time. But we're going to talk about what more New Yorkers can do in the future.
Well, the best way to do that is, and I'll continue to repeat the number, is we need a number or a website or both that our listeners can call or email. We need the contact information so that people who are listening, who want to be helpful, who may be teachers in some of these organizations or who may be a part of these organizations, because that inside pressure would be extraordinarily helpful. And, you know, Scott Stringer is a lame duck now, but he is still the controller. And perhaps on his way out, he might do a good deed. I understand he said something to the effect that he doesn't get involved in these matters and so forth and so on. But he does have a reputation as a liberal and a progressive. And, you know, this is a matter that would be of great benefit to not only, we're not just doing this because it'll be beneficial to Crenshaw, it would, but this, you're setting up a model, an example for Black America in general. And that's why we wanted to have you on. So let's get some contact information out so that people in our listening audience can be in touch with the Crenshaw Subway Coalition.
Well, definitely. And it's downtowncrenshaw.com. That's the effort. It's technically a separate
organization. It's just called Downtown.
Crenshaw.com. Downtown Crenshaw.
All one word.
C-R-E-N. Yep. And
.com.
We're going to put that We're going to put that information up. We'll even establish a /NYC link for the listeners that are in New York so they can take direct action. This is a great strategy and selection or conversation, Dr. Daniels. The other piece that I will say, though, definitely is, you know, we were meeting with an elected official here just last week, and they said, no, this is, let's be clear as to why they don't want to sell it. Because, you know, I'm a very technical person. I can get into the weeds a bit. She says, let's be straight up. This is racism. They don't want you to succeed because they don't want other communities around the country to be doing this. You can have all the money in the world. You can be backed by the richest person on the planet. They are only going to sell you this with you fighting for it. Because right. That's exactly, I mean, we have been able to completely change the conversation as to what could take place at this mall and its redevelopment by just getting a little bit of money. A little bit of money. It sounds like a lot to us. It is a lot to me. But in the big scheme of things, when you look at, pension funds that have $480 billion in the case of CalPERS, and city governments that could have been providing grants, right? We can do this in every black community in America. We really can.
Well, by the way, it's just interesting because this is one of the things that I'm going back to Reverend Jesse Jackson's campaign in 1988. He's one who opened our eyes open to the tremendous power of these pension funds. And he made the same point that they ought to be socially responsible. People ought to be aware where their money goes, and it should be directed towards causes that will, in fact, be consistent with the mission of some of the organizations, the teachers and the social workers. And, you know, people are just oblivious to where their money is going. Look, I'm about out of time. Is there is this the only one? Is that it's going to be downtown Crenshaw .com/NYC?
Yeah, that's what we'll establish. We'll get that NYC up link by the end of the day. But you can go to downtowncrenshaw.com,
right.
And that'll get you plugged in. We got a petition there. It goes to Scott Springer and the people of the Teachers Fund when you sign that. We also have solidarity membership for those that want to give that are throughout the country but want to be part of this process and get updates. And Dr. Daniels, again, brother, I can't thank you enough for being a convener, a leader in this space and helping elevate this conversation on multiple coasts. We know that when they find out, oh no, he's working with the professor, they're going to triple a little bit down there at NYCERS and at TRS.
All right. Well, we're definitely going to push it out. And again, give us those. You're saying NYCHA is, spell that out. Give me that NYCHA is NICHA.
Oh, NYCERS, New York City Employee Retirement System.
New York City Employees.
So every municipal employee of the city of New York, I'm pretty sure, unless your contract is paying into NYCERS.
Right.
Every city has one of these, right? Our version in Los Angeles is LACERS, Los Angeles City Employee Retirement System, and then New York, and then it's known as Teachers Retirement System of New York City, so TRS. They're good. We got to talk about it more because
right.
You're
all right. We're out of time, so I want to have a few minutes just to interact with the audience here. So I let this roll because it was important to get all of this information out. We certainly are going to revisit it. The next time you come with the grandmas to New York, let us know in advance so we can, you know, perhaps let people know. It may well be that even the station across the board might get behind such an initiative, just in terms of at least providing the information so that people can become engaged, which is largely what we do. So, Damian Goodman, who is the executive director of the Crenshaw Subway Coalition and much more. Appreciate you coming and sharing this extraordinary information and analysis and a model for how it is that in this state of emergency, Black America can combat the displacement of Black people and culture and rise up out of this situation with some models that will really move our people powerfully into the 21st century. So thank you so much for spending time with us today on Vantage Point.
Appreciate you as always, Dr. Daniel.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, just only got about 10 minutes left here. I thought I'd have a little bit more time, so I got to shift up here because I wanted to talk about MAGA madness. We'll have to talk about that next week. I think we need to continue to talk about gentrification. So again, what Damon was saying is that our listening audience that is interested in plugging in and finding ways to be supportive. Let me go again. It is one word, Downtown Crenshaw. Now, Crenshaw is C-R-E-N-S-H-A-W. And there are some of you who may want to call. You've probably been to Crenshaw. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. That's the heart. It's just a beautiful, beautiful space in Los Angeles. But now being victimized by gentrification, not only locally, but globally. And they're trying to, you know, they've raised 50, I think you said 59 or you know, somewhere in over in excess of $50 million towards the purchase of the Crenshaw, the story, the Crenshaw Mall, the biggest economic engine in Black Los Angeles. And they'd like to purchase it, but they need more support. And these pension funds is one way that they can do that. So downtowncrenshaw.com. He said by this evening, they will also have a link up that will have /NYC, but don't hesitate, jump right in right now. And that means that there'll be a special place for New Yorkers because we really, really need to organize and galvanize New Yorkers to be a part of the struggle. And we are profoundly thankful again to our revolutionaries in office, Councilman elect now, newly elect Charles Barron, former assemblyman. He'll still be in that position until the end of the year. And of course, his lovely, lovely, formidable political ally, partner, as he would say, Inez Barron. We're going to open up the phones right now just to see if anybody wants to comment and would like to be supportive or to give their own testimonies around gentrification. The number to call is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We'll forego our this conversation about the mega madness that's going on in favor of looking at this issue. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century has said that gentrification, that is to say the displacement of Black people and Black culture, is a state of emergency. And the Crenshaw Subway Coalition and the organizing work that is being done that you just heard about is in the forefront of trying to create a new model, a people-based model, community sharing, a Ujima, collective work and responsibility, an Ujamaa model of how to contend with this wretched, horrible phenomenon over and over and over again. Black people build and are displaced by urban renewal, through gentrification, through redlining, through disinvestment, and all of these things. And talked about the way in which what happens is there's the conscious effort to de-invest and then come and to purchase these communities. And it ain't for Black people to live there or for Black people to, in fact, be able to thrive, but to thrive. And, of course, uplifting the work of Charles Barron and Isaiah Barron in East New York, where they have established a basic principle of anti-gentrification. You ain't coming up in here unless it is for the people and it's going to be affordable for the people. And this is what the rate is going to be, not what you decide the rate is going to be. So if there's anybody who want to call, we have about a few minutes left. We'll get a couple callers in at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. The website, again, that you can go to, that Damon Goodman, laid out is downtowncrenshaw.com. You see, there's a petition there, there's information, there's all kind of ways in which you can be supportive. So if you want to comment on the crisis of gentrification, and Lord knows it is also hitting New York, we have communities that will not be recognizable because of gentrification, you know, and it's like, folks have come to our community and they want to change the community. And, you know, people have a right to live wherever they want to live. But at least if there's going to be development, it ought not to displace Black people and Black culture. We also mentioned and referenced the fact that this is one of the beauties of the National Urban League's Empowerment Center that they're building adjacent to the Adam Clayton Powell office building. It is going to be a place that is predicated on the notion of blunting, blocking, and reversing gentrification by having affordable housing, by having retail, by having a cultural center, a civil rights center, and doing it in a way that, again, as Inez Dickens, as Mark Morrell pointed out, was saying, if it's a project that's going to promote gentrification, don't bring it up in here, because people are now trying to. And by the way, it's we're behind the game, but we need to catch up. We need to, you know, and we are in the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. We'll be reigniting this struggle through something called the. Healthy, safe, and just communities, but also doing it in a way that is holistic, that is communal in nature. Therefore, the whole notion of community development corporations, community worker ownership, you know, land trusts, land banks. And these are some of the ideas that are also being put forth by the Honorable Roz J. Baraka in Newark as well, which is why we actually convened the National Emergency Summit, which you can still go to our website and see, by the way. We still get comments coming in about the National Emergency Summit, which was actually aired live here on WBAI. You can go to the website, ibw21.org, or if you put in your search National Emergency Summit, it'll take you to the IBW website, and you'll be able to actually see that powerful, powerful town hall meeting, and indeed, Councilman, the Baron, Charles Baron was very much a part of it, as was Damon Goodman, but people from all over the country were here from various cities planning and organizing. And we are getting ready. We're going to be asking the National Association of African American Mayors to join us in declaring gentrification a state of emergency in Black America. We're going to be asking faith leaders to join us, civil rights, human rights organizations. We have got to address this issue among many others. Certainly the whole question of white minority rule, voter suppression, and so forth. But we know in our communities are being eaten up. And in some instances, we have elected officials who unintentionally may be complicitous. They don't understand that the very political base that's supporting them will vanish unless there is, in fact, a way of addressing the issue of displacement, of stopping the displacement of Black people and Black culture. Shout out to Buster Soares from down in Somerset, New Jersey, who, as a faith leader, led the way in creating a model of how a faith organization, a church, could actually develop a model of development. I mean, seriously helping Black people to live better without having to succumb to the market forces that bring people in that displace Black people and Black culture. So there are some examples of how this can work, and we certainly want to be in the middle of that Institute of the Black World 21st Century, that is, in that regard. Finally, let me just also again point out that for those of you who are listening and heard this extraordinary interview with Damon Goodman, his effort to, again, to purchase the story, the iconic Crenshaw Mall, but you got a Russian oligarch, I mean, people with all kind of shady reputations and so forth involved in this effort. But the way to be supportive is by going to the website Downtown Crenshaw. And that Crenshaw is CRENSHAW, downtowncrenshaw.com. And you get all the information that you need. Well, next week we'll pick it up with other topics. Again, we were going to open up the phone, but I am really incensed by some of this MAGA madness that's going on. Whether you want to be vaccinated or not is sort of beside the point. You had the CPAC conference. Here's some idiots sitting there applauding the fact that President Biden had not achieved the goal of getting 70% of people vaccinated. Oh, and they just, I mean, this is like idiocy. What is going on? The problem is what's going on, I think, is a danger to democracy, and this damn show is a danger to Black and brown people. And we need to talk about it. And we will next week on Vantage Point. This is the professor saying thank you for listening in at WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica dial in on the Pacifica on WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. We'll see you again next week.